Hi, thank you, Cheryl. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Guiding Lights. It's good to see you all. Last time we were together, which was actually 2 weeks ago, because last week was the Awakening Together Fall Retreat. And I see some of y'all here who are at the retreat. It was nice seeing you in person. But the last time we were here, we were really looking at the story of Jesus' resurrection, at least the first part of the story. We were reading from John chapter 20, and we got as far as verse 18. And one of the things that we looked at last time was the fact that these stories aren't the same. These stories, in fact, all of these stories about Jesus aren't the same. If you were to, you know, get into some anal comparison between Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you would find a lot of differences in these stories. And then, of course, if you take into account all of the different people who channel Jesus and tell the story and the way they tell the story, you're going to end up with a lot of differences. And a person who is seeking truth in story is probably just going to get frustrated. May even begin to think there is no such thing as truth because I cannot find truth here. The truth is not in the story, although when we read the story with the right mind, which again means we have to forget everything that we were ever taught the story means. When we read the story with the right mind, it can give us a current interpretation that does point toward truth. We saw a couple examples of that when we were looking at these stories last week. One, we saw the story of how John and Peter were racing toward the tomb. And let's see if I remember correctly. I think John was in front. And then John, just as he got to the tomb, he paused. He did not enter. And Peter raced right past him, and Peter got into the tomb first. And we looked at an interpretation that came of that, which really was asking us to let go of comparisons on this spiritual path. You know, let go of, you know, oh, I'm ahead of her, or she's ahead of me. And in fact, we even saw that these things, if they are there, they can actually shift quite quickly. That's, you know, John paused. He got a little fearful. He paused, didn't enter the tomb. Peter went in ahead of him. We also saw John telling this story without judgment. You know, John was just reporting, here is what happened. He wasn't mad at Peter for entering the tomb before him. So that was a right-minded interpretation of a story about not comparing our spiritual paths, not looking to see who's ahead, who's behind. And if somebody does appear to be ahead of us, which, you know, that appearance happens. There are people who have clarity and have experiences that we have not yet had. You know, just be grateful for that. Be grateful. This is all one awakening. This isn't 7.5 billion awakenings. This is all one awakening. So, you know, be grateful for awakening wherever awakening happens. Listen for anything that may be helpful to you, but don't compare. And again, if you do happen to be in time ahead of someone else and they ask you for some kind of assistance and you can give some assistance, some clarity, that's great. This is all of us helping each other along. In fact, I think it was when we were hiking the other day, I had this quick image of playing leapfrog as we awaken, you know, where it kind of looks like one person advances and then another person comes up. Oh, yes, I remember talking about this now. Another person says, wow, that person's way ahead of me. You know, I want to get there. I want to catch up to that. And then just catches up and then goes right on past. But then maybe that other person looks ahead and says, oh, wait a minute, that person's ahead of me, catches up and goes right on past. And this leapfrog thing can kind of happen too. And what John is saying is all of that is okay. We don't need to pretend like we don't see it, but we also don't need to be comparing and trying to make some kind of a judgment about how good I am or how bad I am on this path based on where I am compared to others. This is all just natural. This is just a natural thing that happens as we awaken. So that was one interpretation that we saw. The other interpretation we saw was the story of Mary when Jesus first comes to speak to her after the resurrection, she doesn't recognize him. She's looking right at him. She's listening to him. And she doesn't know it's him. And the right-minded interpretation that came out of that is that's the way we often are with, what we would call the Holy Spirit, or the inner spiritual intuition, or some people might even call it, Jesus or Yeshua or something like that. But at some point we may come to recognize it as that spiritual wisdom that has come to wake us up. But everybody, I started to say most everybody, but I think that is completely incorrect. Everybody hears or intuits or knows this guiding voice, this guiding intuition, before they recognize it for what it is. It has always been there, and it's always guided us at different points within our life. We just did not recognize it for what it was. And in fact, one of my favorite stories to tell about this is there's a man here in Pueblo who told me how when he was around 10 years old, and a little ornery, he got this idea. He was in a parking lot somewhere, and he got this idea to chew up a bunch of gum. And this is back when people had to use their keys. They had to stick their keys in their car door and turn it to unlock their door. He got this idea to chew up a bunch of gum and then go stick gum in all the keyholes in the cars so people couldn't get in their cars. And as soon as he had that idea, there was that voice or that feeling, not to do that, not to go that way. And he says he actively remembers repressing that voice and doing it anyway, and that for him, that was the beginning of many, many years of increasing trouble. He ended up a drug addict and poor health as a result of his years of being a drug addict, and at around age 40, he started wanting to come out of that, and he started going back to college and everything else, but he felt like, he had wasted a number of years and was years behind everyone else. But what's interesting is I was talking to him about this inner voice. Oh, he gummed up his life, Kathy says. Yeah. It was interesting because when this conversation came up, we were talking about how to hear this inner voice or hear this inner wisdom. And as we were having that discussion, he then realized that's what he heard when he was 10. And if he had listened to it when he was 10, and started listening to it when he was 10, maybe he wouldn't have gone through these hard years that he went through. So it was always there. And so that's the right-minded interpretation we saw in the story of Mary, where she didn't recognize it at first, but it was there. And then, of course, she did come to recognize it, which at some point we all do. At some point we come to recognize it for what it is. And even then, it can still be a challenge to listen to it because we think it's separate from us. We think it's a sacrifice to listen to it. It's going to make me do things I don't want to do, right? So even after we begin to recognize it, it can be some time before we realize that it really is the wisdom of our true self, and that, being in harmony with it is simply being in harmony with ourself. And that's where happiness and joy comes from, no longer being in conflict with ourself. So that's kind of a review of the last episode of The Guiding Light. And so today we're going to begin at John chapter 20, verse 19, continuing with these stories from Jesus' resurrection as they're told in the book of John. And we'll see what other interpretations come. I just want to say that I have John Mark Stroud here, and I have invited him, if he wants to speak up. Whether he will or will not remains to be seen. But just let me tell you about a possibility that could occur if he chooses to speak up. I could read a story, one interpretation of that story could come to me, a right-minded interpretation, and a different interpretation could come to him. And if that happens, again, that is perfect. The ego gets this idea that there should be one interpretation of this story, and all other interpretations are wrong. And that is not true. There are many, many right-minded interpretations to every single story. And sometimes I'll read a story, get an interpretation, and then, a year or two later, read it and get it a completely different interpretation from the same story. The only way that you know it's a right-minded interpretation is that it's pointing in what I'm going to call the right direction. It is pointing toward awakening. And so there isn't a a right interpretation of the New Testament. Mm-hmm. In fact, another funny story is one of my first major steps on the spiritual path occurred when I was around age 30. And what I did was I said a prayer. I wanted very much to find the truth. And I said a prayer, and I asked to find the truth, and I said, you know, I don't care what it is, which again I think was really important. I don't care what it is. But even though I said that, I still had an idea in my mind that it was going to be the Christian religion that had the right interpretation of the Bible. And so then I started this really long research project that lasted months attempting to find that religion, and all I found out was that's not where truth lied. There was no religion with the right interpretation of the Bible. It didn't exist. And that, of course, opened my mind to finding truth because I got rid of the idea that I thought was going to be truth. So it was really a very helpful step. And that even years later, you know, in my mid-40s, I'm guided to read the New Testament and an interpretation comes through me, which I don't have around me right now, but you all know is NTI, the Holy Spirit's interpretation of the New Testament. And what's interesting is I always knew intuitively, even though that book was absolutely perfect for me then, and that book is absolutely perfect for some other people now, which is why it went on to be published and all of that, I knew that that was not the right interpretation of the New Testament. That was a helpful interpretation of the New Testament. It points in the right direction. And one bit of proof of that is, if you go open NTI and read the interpretation of the book of John and then go listen to these guiding light interpretations of the book of John, they're not the same, right? They're not the same. And that's because there was a certain interpretation that was helpful to me then. I wasn't even ready. I wasn't ready for the interpretation that's coming now. I don't think I was able to let this type of clarity that we've seen since we've been looking at the book of John and the guiding light, I wasn't ready to let it come through yet. And so what came through was what was good for me then, but now another interpretation, if I should sit down and decide to do this again in 5 years, there may be another. So that idea that there is a right answer is not correct. And one reason this is important for everyone to understand is because when you sit down and read the Bible or some other book, you know, if you are open to your right mind in some way is going to start talking to you about what you're reading. It's going to start giving you insight. And this is what I call contemplation, reading in a contemplative way. It's going to start giving you insight. And if you have this idea in your mind that you have to get the right answer, you're going to block the insight because your mind then will be in judgment, right? If you think there has to be a right answer, you're going to be in judgment. And when the right mind attempts to give you an insight, your wrong mind is going to stomp on it and say, no, that's not the right answer. So the idea that there's only one way to see all of this really needs to be let go if you want to be open to your own clarity and you want to do this on your own and get your own insight. And again, we also have to let go of everything we were taught that these words mean. Everything has to be let go. Read with complete emptiness, and then something new can come. So what I'm going to do now is what we always do, which is after we review the previous guiding light, we play music, and then we shift into the new one. And this song jumped out at me, so I always play the one that jumps out at me. I'll just explain this song a little bit. This is called Do You Call That Religion? And it's by a bluegrass group called the Johnson Mountain Boys. And listen to with the wrong mind, you could, you know, think this is a very judgmental song and you might not like it. But the way that I listen to the song, the way that I hear it, is the song is asking me to be authentic. Not to say one thing, to pretend, for example, to be a spiritual person and then secretly live in another way. It's asking me to be purely authentic, completely in harmony with my true self, to the best of my ability at this current time. So, and I think that's a very genuine guidance. So that's the guidance that I hear in this song. So I'll play this song next. I do want to answer Lynn's question. Lynn asked, how long John Mark is going to be here And both he and Jacqueline are leaving tomorrow. So, oh, and by the way, today is Jacqueline's birthday. She's the big 5'5" today. So. All right, so let me play this song. Wait, what did Kathy write? I want to read this. Be the real deal without the deal. There we go. That's what this song means to me. And the Johnson Mountain Boys, just FYI, used to be friends of mine. So I also just enjoy having them in my playlist for that reason. All right, so here we go. Do you call that religion? Make sure I have a good volume. Here we go.
Well, the preacher in his church house all reared back in his chair. When you tell him about his duty, he'll say that he don't care.
Do you call that religion?
Oh, no.
Call that religion?
No, child, no.
Do you call that religion?
Oh, no.
Daddy Claire, ain't that a shame?
Well, you claim that you've been converted. Well, why don't you stop telling lies? Quit drinking your beer and your whiskey and live a more different life.
Do you call that religion?
Oh, no.
Do you call that religion?
No, child, no.
Do you call that religion?
Oh, no.
I declare, ain't that a shame?
Sunday when the preacher was preaching, Lord, you all began to shout. And when he asked for a little collection, you had your mouth poked out.
Do you call that religion?
Oh, no.
Do you call that religion?
Don't you know?
Do you call that religion?
Oh, no.
I declare, ain't that a shame? I declare, ain't that a shame?
Well, I'll tell you what, you know if you're a bluegrass fan when you listen to them. Because if you are, that just goes right into the heart. And if you aren't, you know, it's probably like, okay, I'm glad that song's over. But, yeah, and they are, what is it that you win if you're a musician? Grammy?
Grammy.
Yeah, they're Grammy Award winners. It's just the bluegrass category isn't on the TV prior to turning on the cameras. But they're Grammy-winning bluegrass musicians, and they are fantastic.
You know what I got? The closing line, isn't that a shame? And that's the source of where our inner shame comes from, because we are not in attunement. We're not in authenticity of the expression of our highest self. And then that shame compounds itself into a deeper hiding instead of a movement towards. If we would just recognize, oh, it's a shame, I was out of alignment, let me just get right back in, rather than doing what we normally do by the hiding game of shame, then the shame can actually be a redirect. Isn't that a shame? Can be a redirecting nudge instead of proof that we're bad.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, at the Awakening Together retreat when I was teaching, we talked about how once upon a time I was guided to look up the word guilt on the internet. And I found this article that said what we call guilt is just a biological reaction in the body that is intended to help us see when we made a mistake so we can learn from it and become wiser.
Yeah, just a redirection.
Just a redirection. And that we're the ones that turned it into the, oh, I'm bad. You know, so it's that same type of idea. If we see that we're out of harmony with clarity, then we can just step back into harmony.
Just like the pain of a pebble in your shoe.
Yes.
Thank gosh for the indication I need to make a change.
Yes, I need to get that rock out of my shoe.
Celebrate it.
Yeah. And just, I'm just curious because he's laying here on my purple sofa, all comfortable. Can you guys hear him okay when he's laying over there? Can he continue to recline and pipe up whenever he wants to? We'll just wait and see what they say to that. Yes, Francine says yes. So you can just lay there and be relaxed and just, you know, project your voice a little bit when you choose to get involved. How's that sound? Okay, good, good. All right, so what I will do is I will read the next story in the Bible and then we'll just see where it takes us. By the way, one other thing I want to say before I get started, because I might forget once I get in the zone. Today, starting today, and you know, for who knows how long, Gina Lake is now going to follow me. So each Wednesday, the guiding light is going to be from 2:30 to 3:30, and then starting immediately after at 3:30, Gina Lake will be here for half an hour. She will be reading from her books that are channeled from Jesus. And then either sharing on them or possibly even channeling Jesus sharing on them. And also everyone that's in the room is invited to raise their hand and ask questions. So today will be the first day. And again, she'll be here right after me each week. All right. So the next story, as it's presented in my NIV Bible, is called Jesus Appears to His Disciples. This begins at John chapter 20, verse 19. On the evening of that first day of the week, when the disciples were together with the doors locked for fear of the Jews, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." After he said this, he showed them his hands and side. The disciples were overjoyed when they saw the Lord. Again, Jesus said, "Peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, I am sending you." And with that, he breathed on them and said, "Receive the Holy Spirit. If you forgive anyone his sins, they are forgiven. If you do not forgive them, they are not forgiven." So let's go back and look at the interpretation of this story. You know, one of the first things that's noted in this story, and not noted by accident, is that they were together, but that they had their doors locked for fear of the Jews. And of course, what this is referring to is that they saw what happened to Jesus' body. And in their mind, this is what happened to Jesus, right? This is what happened to the Messiah in their mind, right? This is what happened to the Messiah. So now they're very afraid that they are going to be arrested and they are going to be tortured, crucified. So they're afraid. And this fear shows that they have a complete identification with the body, personality, mind as who I am. So in spite of the fact that they've been with Jesus for 3 years, observing him, listening to his teachings, the shift hasn't really occurred here with the disciples. They're still completely men and possibly women, but the way that the story is told, it's men. They're still completely men. They see themselves as men, and they're very afraid of the punishment that they saw Jesus go through. So Jesus shows up, and the first thing he says is, "Peace be with you." So what he's indicating to them is they do not need to be in fear. And in fact, you know, later he says it again, because the first time he says, "Peace be with you," it only penetrates so far, right? But when he says, "Peace be with you," it does penetrate to some distance, into them with some distance, and there's a bit of relaxation that occurs. First of all, although it's not commented on too much here, they are seeing, well, it does say the disciples were overjoyed when they saw the Lord. So they are seeing now that their idea of Jesus as a man, as a body, and when that body was beaten and put to death, that was the end of it, right? They are seeing now, witnessing now, that they were mistaken. And so if they were mistaken about Jesus, what has not quite occurred to them yet, but it will, if they were mistaken about Jesus, then they can also be mistaken about themselves. If he is not a body, then maybe I am not a body. And so this first peace be with you, right, along with this image of Jesus, whom they thought was a man, right? This first peace with be with you penetrates enough that something in them realizes they're wrong. They're wrong about the way they thought. And it's not real deep yet. You know, it's very, very quick right now, but they see that they were wrong, and the Bible says they were overjoyed. They were overjoyed at being wrong. And I find that to be a very important lesson, way beyond this story of the resurrection, because if we cling to our ideas that we're right about everything, we're right about the people, how the people in our family should behave, we're right about how things should go at work, we're right about what should happen in this upcoming political election, we're right about how people should behave in traffic, you know, we're if we're holding on to all of that I'm rightness, we're also holding on to the belief that I am this body, mind, personality. This is what I am. Yeah, Kathy says, right about a thing. If I'm right about a thing, I think I am a thing. So they are overjoyed at finding out that they're wrong. In fact, oh my God, there's nothing better than finding out that you are wrong. If you can see that you are wrong over and over and over again and start experiencing the same joy that they see, the fact that they are wrong, you can begin, you know, really wakening up to who you are very, very quickly. But to the degree that you're going to hold on to I'm right, you're going to slow yourself down. So it's a very important lesson here that they were overjoyed that they were wrong. But again, that first peace be with you only penetrated so far. So again, Jesus says, peace be with you, right? He says it again so that now that this first layer has been penetrated, now they see that they were wrong and they are overjoyed. But exactly what does that mean? Has not happened yet. He now says, peace be with you again, where it can begin to penetrate a little more. So what does that mean if I'm wrong? If I am wrong about the fact that I am this mortal person, what does that mean, right? That next level of questioning, that can come with this second peace be with you. And then he says, as the Father has sent me, I am sending you. And of course, we all know that to one degree, what this sentence means is that he is going to send them out as witnesses into the world. And we know that this is what the apostles did. They scattered and they witnessed to their experience, sharing their experience with others. But there's something else here too. There's an equality here, which is very, very important with what's happening. Jesus is not saying, oh, look at me. I'm the great one who was resurrected. Right? Oh, look at me. How I can do what nobody else can do. Right? That's not what he's saying to them. He is saying, as the Father has sent me, I am sending you. He is sharing a statement of equality with them. And we know that earlier in the book of John, you know, he said, whatever things I have done, you will do greater than these. Right? And so here he is again. It's that very, very similar statement of equality. Now think about this. Assuming this story is true, which I really have no idea, but we can at least go into our imaginations for a moment in order to feel the impact of this story. Assuming this story is true, they are now looking at a being that they know for a fact was killed. In fact, he even goes on to say that he showed them his hands, he showed them his side. So this isn't a long-lost twin brother. This is the being that was killed. This is a being that they knew for a fact had died. And now that fact is not true. That takes everything they've ever thought and turns it upside down on its head. Everything they ever believed now has to be in question. I mean, if the fact that someone dies is not true, then, you know, is the fact that a wife is supposed to do this and a husband's supposed to do this true? Right? I mean, everything you've ever believed has to come into question. And so he is really pointing to them that they are now going to begin this rapid questioning process. And as a result of beginning this rapid questioning process, they are going to begin a process of seeing differently. And as they continue to go through their own experiences of awakening, they are going to be sharing their continuing dawning, their continuing dawning of awakening, which, of course, as we saw in an earlier speech from Jesus, is going to spark that beginning of that awakening in other individuals, right? It's going to start spreading all over the world. You know, witnessing one awakening sets another on that path. So Jesus, again, absolute equality. It was my awakening that sparked yours, and now it's your awakening that's going to spark others. There's no difference between me and you. I am not higher than you, right? I am not different from you. This process is just going to continue because we are all equals. And it's going to continue until it is complete. So peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, I am sending you. And then it says, and with that he breathed on them and said, receive the Holy Spirit. So receive the Holy Spirit. Now again, the Holy Spirit isn't actually something that was outside of them, that he had to breathe on them. This breathing on them is just a symbol. But what it does, probably especially to these men whose whole world has just been turned upside down, is it's like a word to them that says, be open. You know, be open. Start tuning in now that everything you ever believed has just been proven wrong. Start tuning in to this voice within you. Because again, these men have been very outward focused. They have been listening to Jesus, the man who is the teacher. And we know the end of this story, so we know Jesus isn't going to hang around in this resurrected form very long. And they need to learn that the teacher is within them. The same teacher that led Jesus to his awakening is within them and can lead them to their awakening. They don't need this outer form of this man that they think they knew so well. So when he breathes on them, it's really just be open, turn your sight around and look to see what you see, right? Be open. So he says, receive the Holy Spirit. And then he says, if you forgive anyone his sins, they are forgiven. If you do not forgive them, they are not forgiven. Well, of course, traditional religion interprets this as, you know, like if the Apostle Peter forgives a particular beggar, then that particular beggar is now sinless. And if the Apostle Peter passes judgment on that particular beggar, that particular beggar remains a sinner. And at some degree, we all know this story, this interpretation, because we have millions of jokes about St. Peter standing at the gate of heaven waiting to judge us, right? Isn't that like, don't we have tons and tons and tons of jokes about that?
But that, some funnier than others.
Some funnier than others. I have a real funny one. Maybe we'll tell jokes when we get done here. Let's see. But so we all know that that's what we think this means, that if we are forgiven by St. Peter, by the apostles, by Jesus, by God, right, maybe by our priest, then we are forgiven. But if someone outside of me says that I'm a sinner, then I'm a sinner. And that's something we need to stop and look at right now. In fact, I have had so many people say this to me when they're talking to me about the guilt they feel or the unworthiness they feel. And I point out to them that this judgment is coming from their own mind, that they're the one who decided their round belly meant that they were unworthy, or they're the one that decided the fact that they don't learn as fast as someone else makes them stupid. what almost always happens is they see that. It's kind of like the first peace be with you. That penetrates somewhat. They see that their own judgment is at least a part of the problem. But then there's a but. I always say the ego has a big but. Then there's this but. But my husband judges me too. My boss judges me too. My friend judges me too. My mom judges me too, right? It's like unless I can get everybody out there to agree that I'm sinless, I must be guilty. And that's not true. And I'll share in a moment what this true interpretation of these sentences are. But that's not true. You are sinless, even if everyone in your life tells you what a loser you are, how guilty you are, how you shouldn't have done that. That's just their mistake. You are sinless no matter what. So you do not need to wait for everyone else to deem you sinless before you accept the truth about you. Really, the only thing that you need to watch is your own self-judgment. Because what's happening, if I happen to come up to you, and I happen to be in my wrong mind that day, and I say something to you, I say, you know what? I just don't ever want to have anything to do with you again because you really are a loser. Sorry, I would never say that, but let's pretend. You really are a loser, right? What happens very, very quickly in your mind after I say that, if I do, is that you agree. It wasn't my comment that you're a loser that resulted in your perception of yourself. It was your agreement to my comment. And in fact, is my friend Francine still here? I'd rather tell the story in front of her. Yeah, she's still here. Francine, I'm going to talk about you now. Get ready. Francine is a tiny person. Any of y'all have seen her know that. She's a tiny person in every way. Most of us are not. Most of us that are over 50, we've grown a little bit. Do you agree? So most of us, if I was to walk up to you and say, wow, you've really gained some weight, quickly, how are you going to interpret that in your mind? I'm bad, right? Something's wrong. Most people.
Say, thanks for noticing.
Yeah. But that's you, John Mark. Most people are what?
I'm bad.
I'm shame. I'm bad. But if I walk up to Francine and I say, even if I say, Francine, oh my God, you're such a fat pig, she's going to laugh. Because there's no way, she knows, there's no way that's true about her. In fact, we played this game before, so I know it's true. I did it with her in front of an NTI group once live. I said, Francine, you are so fat. And she burst out laughing, right? Because there was no inner agreement, right? There was no inner agreement. It wasn't my words that can hurt. You know, my words might hurt some of you if I said the same thing, if I said you are so fat, but that's because of your inner agreement. That's because you look at your body and you judge your body in some way, and it's proof of your unworthiness, right? So your inner agreement is what hurts, not my words. And the fact that Francine laughs is proof of that, right? So maybe you do have people in your life who tell you that you're stupid, you're lazy, you're worthless, you don't have any common sense, you're fat, you're ugly, you know, and whatever other insults they can think of. Maybe you do have people in your life that say that about you, but literally your inner agreement is what's holding you back in the belief of yourself as the sinner or as the not good enough. It has nothing to do with their words. So the incorrect interpretation of what Jesus is saying here is that we need outer forgiveness, that we need others to forgive us or else we remain a sinner. And again, this belief is very deep in your mind. And if you don't believe me, just start paying attention. Watch, because somebody will show up to tell you that you're stupid or that you're wrong or whatever. Learn to watch and notice that it's the inner agreement that's hurting you. Not the words, the inner agreement. And pay attention to that. Because when you can start to see that you're the one holding yourself back, then you can start to allow yourself to be set free. All right? So let's look at the proper interpretation of these words, at least as it comes to me. If you forgive anyone his sins, they are forgiven. If you do not forgive them, they are not forgiven. That's talking about me. So I'm going to use John Mark as an example because I don't think he can get offended, but we'll find out if I'm wrong.
Yeah, let's see.
Let's test him. So let me see if I can think. Is there anything here that I can? I don't like the way John Mark dresses. In fact, he did his laundry today, and he walked out with about how many shirts? 15 shirts. They all looked. They all looked exactly alike. You know, what's this guy trying to do? Put on some kind of an image, right? You know, he's sitting over here laughing now. But if I for some reason believe that John Mark is a fake, and he's putting on an image. Okay, he's sitting over there laughing. Who's going to suffer? Right? Who's going to suffer with my judgment of John Mark? And then when I get around you guys, next time I see you guys and you come up to me and you tell me how great John Mark's retreat was, I feel that little stab again. Right? He's still laughing. Because I decided he's a fake.
Because I used to do this to myself.
Oh, you used to do this yourself. That's what this is talking about. If you forgive anyone his sins, they are forgiven. This isn't talking about the outer experience. This is talking about the inner experience. Let me read the second part. If you do not forgive them, they are not forgiven. So if I decide in my little judgmental mind, because of what I saw in his laundry, if I decide in my little judgmental mind that he's just trying to put on an image and that he's a fake, then I have to carry that burden. That burden is on me. And again, every time one of you guys tell me how great John Mark is, I suffer. Right? That is in me. If I do not forgive, which really means see with right-minded eyes, if I do not forgive, then it's not forgiven in me. If I do forgive, if I can see the error of my way, if I can see that I'm absolutely wrong, he just likes rainbow-colored clothes, right? Simple, and that's okay, you know, no big deal. If I can see the error of my ways and I can let go instead of hold on to that thought, then in me, I'm free. I am free. In fact, with that, I'm going to play another song. And this is actually a song I got from Francis Bennett, which I'm mentioning because the first time I saw John Mark, he was being interviewed with Francis Bennett. So Francis Bennett's the one who gave me this song. It's called Forgiveness, and it's by Matthew West. Listen to these words.
Right to hold a grudge, it's the whisper in your ear, say it, set it free. prisoner free. There is no end to what its power can do. So let it go and be amazed by what you see through eyes of grace. The prisoner that it really frees is you. Forgiveness.
Forgiveness by Matthew West. So that's what these words mean. If I forgive anyone what I had decided was his sins, right? Because really, any grievance that I would have against anyone is just the meaning that I put on the situation. And if it's my meaning, I can decide that I was wrong. And in fact, like the disciples, I can be overjoyed that I was wrong, right? So if I forgive someone by changing my mind about the meaning I put on the situation, then I'm the one that's set free. I'm unburdened, right? This is a part of how I set myself free. However, if I choose not to forgive them or choose to believe, to continue to believe that I am right about the meaning that I put on the situation, well, then they are not forgiven in me and I get to carry the burden. Either way, I'm free. You know, I'm either choosing the sense of freedom by deciding to let go of the meaning that I put on a situation, or I am choosing the sense of burden by not letting go of the meaning I put on the situation. I may not feel free when I choose the sense of burden, but I am free. I was free to make that choice, right? So, John Mark, you want to take over for 10 minutes?
Sure, I'll share what dropped in.
Okay.
So, as you were reading, the first time you said, peace be with you, as you said, be, I heard is. Because, for instance, if I said to you, be happy, you would engage some mental-based, probably, some mental-based strategy about what being happy means, what it would look like, what you would have to do, and so forth and so on. You know, Yeshua taught in Aramaic, which was a very, very simple language, and that one word could have many multiple meanings, and the word for be and is was the same Aramaic word. That doesn't come to mind right now. But the emphasis that you placed on it determined the meaning. Because for me, what Yeshua was saying is, peace is you. Peace is your nature. It is before all that action in the mind that is be, because we mistake be with becoming, a time-based strategy through action and, you know, changing our mind, yada, yada. So I think it was saying, peace is with you. The I am that I, as Jesus is the I am that you disciples are, and it is here and it is now. It's that prerequisite before any becoming ever moves, the immovable. And a lot of what Jesus really taught was more of an Eastern isness or suchness, rather than becoming through behavioral stuff, which is how his ministry oftentimes got translated into and distorted. So his appearance is, peace is here. Here I am. Peace is with you in my form because I am but peace. And by the way, that's equally true for you. Not that you will become it, but it is your nature as we were all created to be.
Oh, wait, what Hazel's saying, you're not loud enough. I just looked. No. Want to come over here and sit in my chair?
Wow, that was a lot.
That's okay.
Okay, so I guess I'll do that again because it feels really funny. Really funny, yeah, me too. So as Regina was reading Peace Be With You, in my own inner converter, which is a lot like that thing of Apple, you know, it'll auto-correct, but mine's much more accurate than the one on my iPhone. She said, peace be, and in the moment she said be, I heard the word is. Peace is with you. So if you were to read that, I don't even know where it is. Maybe Regina can read
right
it again.
Here, right here, peace be with you, and then again, peace be with you.
So on the evening of the first day of the week, when the disciples were together, with the doors locked for fear of the Jews, Jesus came and stood among them and said, peace is with you. So if I said to any of you, be joyful, watch, and your mind will begin thinking, well, what does joyful mean? What does it look like? What am I supposed to do to outpicture my image of being joyful? And of course, none of that's actually it. That's the mind in its image-making interpretive mode. So for me, what Yeshua was saying is, here I am, the Alpha, the Omega, the isness of being, which is peace, before any being, meaning becoming, happens. So he shows up, and what's the first words out of his mouth? I am peace. Peace is here. Peace is with you. And it also happens to be your nature. And I won't add on to what Regina so beautifully talked about, how the disciples let that first wave in, but then, you know, didn't go much further. Because a lot of Jesus' teachings had a more Eastern flavor. It was about the isness or the suchness. That which is true and always true before things move, before things change, before thought and idea and concept and belief. So for me, he's really just saying peace is. And he was identified wholly as that. And of course, he knows that that's not only his truth, it's not unique to him. If you truly realize it, you realize, well, shit, that's everybody's truth. And there's nothing we can do about it. Not that we would really want to. But it's just that. So the isness of peace is with you. And that's true for all of us. And it's not that we have to be or become it through a behavioral something that our mind makes up. Rather, we let all that go to discover an isness which already is, that has nothing to do with anything we think or effort or believe or strive for, or effort at, or anything else. It just is the very nature of our being. So that's what I got. You know, when his words rang very differently than be in my own being. And I mentioned earlier, I'll say it again because I don't know if you could hear, but Yeshua taught in Aramaic, which was very, very simple. Now, Hazel's wrote, just be it. Okay, I don't know what that means to you, Hazel, but go right ahead. So when he taught in Aramaic, one Aramaic word could mean be, which is a more behavioral kind of thing, or is, which is just kind of intrinsic truth. And the subtlest pronunciation difference of the speaker would indicate the different meanings. Now, of course, when all of his teachings were translated, he taught the present, but we translated them into time, didn't we? So his peace is with you is what spoke in the depth of my heart, what spoke in the depth of being. Not that I have to be that through some strategy or act in a certain way that Regina will go, wow, look how peaceful that guy is. And then I can mistake her perception as being my reality. When we each share a reality of isness, peace is with us,
which is long before and always present, no matter what we're doing with our mind or our consciousness. So that's what I really got out of that. And so if you go on to the next, that line 21, where it says, again, Jesus said, peace. Now here it says be, but I'm going to translate that. Peace is with you as the Father has sent me in perfect peace as an extension of God. I am now sending you. Is as a now thing, not to become or be like a mental outpicturing, but what God created us to be, which is already whole and already perfect and already present, and it can't go anywhere else. And none of our actions can actually improve it or diminish it. So that's what I got, my friend.
Very much. Now, we have 4 minutes left. Do you have any St. Peter jokes?
Do I have any? Well, I have the beautiful one about Peter and Forrest Gump, but I don't remember all the details. Brent told that one.
Oh. Me neither. Well, tell you what, let me tell a joke then.
Yeah, so I tell you what, if you do want to play this whole, you know, after death, you're going to meet St. Peter at some threshold, when you see him, just say, is, and he'll let you right in.
Okay, here's my one and only St. Peter joke, so some of you may have heard it before, but I don't know that I've ever told it here in the sanctuary, so it might be the first time. So three guys are killed in a car wreck, and they go up to heaven, they go up to the gates where St. Peter's standing, and St. Peter admits them all into heaven, but he gives them one warning. He says there's only one rule in heaven: don't step on the ducks. Well, they think that's a pretty crazy rule, but okay, and they walk into heaven, and within just a second, the first guy steps on a duck, because there are ducks everywhere in heaven. There are ducks everywhere. And so as soon as this first guy steps on a duck, St. Peter runs over with the ugliest woman these guys have ever seen. And he chains this guy to this woman for all of eternity. And the other two guys go, oh, no, we're not going to step on ducks. But again, there were so many ducks that within 45 minutes, the second guy steps on a duck. Same thing happens. St. Peter comes running over with just this horribly, horribly ugly woman and chains that man to this woman for the rest of eternity. So the third and only remaining guy now says, I am going to be very, very careful and I am not going to step on a duck. And I guess he gets all zen about it or something, because he is able to go for 2 years without stepping on a duck.
He must like shuffle his feet.
Maybe. Shuffle in his feet. So after about 2 years, St. Peter comes running over, but with the most gorgeous woman this man has ever seen, and chains him to this beautiful, beautiful woman for the rest of eternity. And then St. Peter disappears, and the guy goes, oh, he looks at her and says, I wonder what I did to deserve this. And she goes, I don't know, but I stepped on a duck. There we go. At least they laughed. It is more fun telling a joke when there are people in the room to actually respond. All right, so that's it for us today. And I guess Gina Lake is in the room because I see people welcoming Gina. So, Cheryl, I am going to release the mic for you.
Hi,
and,
Gina.
And, oh, that's John Mark Stroud, Cheryl. He's sitting here in my, I mean, Gina. Gina, that's John Mark Stroud. He's sitting here in my office. I think you know him. So we will be sitting here listening to you, and I am releasing the mic. And I am still recording.